We raise so many different kinds of fruits here in Wisconsin that it only seems appropriate that once in a while we devote a whole 90 minutes on Garden Talk to the subject of fruits. And we have two members of the UW Fruit Team with us today. Rebecca Harbutt, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Rebecca, good to have you back. Thank you for being with us.
Nice to be here.
And also Dan Marr, Emeritus Professor of Horticulture, of Entomology at the UW-Madison. And Dan, great to have you back as well.
Thanks, Ari, and you better get that right.
It's entomologist. And you guys are two members. You got a big, there's a big fruit team at UW-Madison.
That's so right.
We've got that. And if you have a question for our guests as we move along today, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or if you have a question or photo you want to shoot to us, you can do that on my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can do it right there. And we have a Facebook question already from Dave in Augusta. I have one apple tree in the orchard that produces grapefruit-sized apples. I'm told they're at Wolf River. Great for cooking, not great eating. Can you give any history on those apples? Also, 2011 was the best growing year for all my apple trees, but I will need to prune them. Should I wait for winter to do this? So what do you think? Rebecca, you want to?
Yeah, so Wolf River apple is a, it's an old one, and I don't really know a whole lot about the history of the Wolf River apple, the specifics of it.
Dan, do you know anything? Yeah.
No, I don't. But when I first arrived in Wisconsin 30 years ago, I was working in an 80-year-old orchard that had Wolf River apples in it. So it's been around for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about that one. In terms of
pruning,
yeah, and this was a great year for apples, and yet you're going to need to prune your trees. And you should definitely wait until winter to do this, and actually late winter, early spring is when you want to prune your trees. The risk of winter injury is a little lower if you wait as long as possible. So go in and cut out some of the oldest wood, and depending on how big and how old your trees are will influence some of the pruning aspects that you do. But you really want to take out anything that's diseased or broken, and hanging downward is your top priority. And then start going through and take out some of the wood that is either in the wrong place or just needs to be rejuvenated.
So. Yeah. All right. Amy emailed us. I live in Madison, have a question about the apple trees in my yard. They were planted as saplings 2 years ago. But I don't think they got good enough water the past couple of years. They still look quite small and spindly and flower, but do not set fruit. Is this normal for trees this young? Will they improve gradually over time on their own, or should I be watering, fertilizing, etc. in a particular way?
Yeah. So trees need water, and they need fertilizer, and they need some love. So if they didn't get water, particularly in that first year, the trees have a hard time establishing and really getting a good root system down in the ground, and so they start out stressed. And so it really is critical when you plant a tree to make sure that you're providing enough water for it so that it can really establish well. Typically, trees won't bear fruit in the first couple years, and you don't really want them to bear fruit for the first couple of years because it can be a bit stressful on them. So if they're flowering and aborting the fruit, especially in this case, they'll abort fruit when they don't have enough resource in the tree to actually grow that fruit out. So those, even though it may flower, it may not produce fruit if the tree is stressed. So in coming years, you definitely want to get some water on there, a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer on there, or some type of organic mulch is another way to go. But water is probably your number one priority. And this year we had some pretty good dry spells this year.
Yes, we did.
So water stress was very likely a pretty big issue for you.
Let's go to Hans in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Hans. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a raspberry question.
Okay.
We have some regular raspberries and black raspberries, and I got no fruit this past summer, which I think is kind of tough for everybody. But my main question is, and I apologize because I think this question gets answered every time there's a fruit show, but how I should prepare for next season with trimming and other preparation.
So are these raspberries fall-bearing raspberries, or are they summer-bearing raspberries?
Summer.
Summer-bearing.
Both black raspberries and some regular ones.
Okay, so you'll want to prune out all the canes that are old, so you just want the one-year-old canes left for next season. And you can do that late winter, early spring. You go through and cut those out. And then a lot of times you'll want, if it's a thick stand, to actually thin some of those one-year-old canes out as well, so that you don't have too much cane in your raspberry stand. Water's a big one. Again, that if they're water stressed, and this year we had some water stress problems with raspberries. We also had some pollination issues with raspberries. We had some cool weather during pollination this year, and so we had pockets around the state that really didn't have good pollination, so they didn't end up getting much fruit set there. But pruning and cleaning out that planting is really critical, and then making sure that they have some water available to them is important. You can put down fertilizer in the spring if they need to get a bit of a boost to get going for the year.
Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. Thank you, Hans. Dan in Partyville, on to you now. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a question about Concord grapes.
Okay.
Some of my vines seem to be morphing into a really small sour grape. At first, I thought it was wild grapes that got in there, but they're not. The vines go attached to the main stalk. What can I do about that?
So your grapes are turning out really sour.
Yeah, small and real sour. Not all of them, but the plant seems to be morphing into something else. Was it because of the weather? I did get some good grapes.
So do you prune or do anything to those vines, or do you just let them go and
We've been letting them go because I'm afraid to touch them, but I'm going to prune them this year.
Yeah, so if you have a lot of fruit coming on your grapevine, you can end up with smaller or less sugar in those fruit just because the vine doesn't have enough resources. A lot of grapes will produce a lot more fruit than they can ripen as well as we'd like them to ripen. So when we go through and prune grapes, that's one of the ideas, is that we want to kind of reduce the amount of fruit that the vine is actually having to carry, but also to expose them to light. So if the clusters are really hidden in a really thick canopy.
Yeah, this year they were very dense.
Okay, so if that's the case, you typically won't get really great fruit development under those conditions, because the berries need to be exposed to the sunlight and they need to have that space to grow. So my guess is it's actually a canopy management thing, that maybe you need to go in this winter and prune them, and then throughout the season next year, when those clusters are starting to set, actually go through and try to make sure that they're exposed. And if there are clusters that are really deep in that canopy, just completely remove them off of the vine.
Oh, okay. Great. Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And on to Bob in Rice Lake. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I had a Gala apple, the apple tree that spring it started out pretty good. I got nice blossoms on it, but then I noticed that it was developing a black, almost like a mold on the bark. The bark began to start to peel away, and I got a little concerned about it. So actually what I did was just remove the tree completely and burned it, because I didn't want it to get to my other apple trees. What is that, and is there something I can do about that rather than losing the whole tree?
Okay. Dan, any ideas there?
Rebecca and I are kind of staring at each other with a question mark. I've never seen a situation where the tree trunk will actually turn moldy like that.
Well, it wasn't like a mold, but I was trying to describe what it looked like. It's not a fuzzy, but the bark turned black, and it literally peeled from the wood bark. I mean, it was drying real quickly.
Hmm.
And I didn't want to take any chances with it, so.
Yeah.
There are some disease problems that can cause the bark to loosen up like that. What you did was probably correct in taking out the tree. It's a little bit difficult. I would say if you experience that on other small trees in the future, you might want to bring some or send a sample into the diagnostic lab and have them take a look at it, or possibly even take some digital pictures and send them into the diagnostic lab.
Okay, I'll do that. After I removed it, it seemed to have, I didn't have it happen to the other trees I've got. The other problem I've got is I've got some Connell Reds and some Fireside that I've been trying to spray them with insecticidal soap. I don't like to use anything that is too strong on them. And sometime after the fruits are formed, they're apparently picking up some sort of a bug, and it makes like a pin, about a pin-sized hole, and it goes in, you know, about halfway into the flesh. And I'm not sure if I should be spraying more often or using something else, I guess.
Hmm. Do you get, in association with the pin-sized holes, do you see any trailing through the flesh when you cut the apple open?
Yeah, there's a regular trail. It makes a little, about the size of, I guess, a pin, but it'll go in anywhere between a half an inch to an inch and a half sometimes.
And what time of the year do you see this?
This is when the fruit is ripened.
What you may have is apple maggot, or what's sometimes called railroad worm, and that's a fly which actually has a very sharp egg-laying structure on it, and actually inserts its egg under the skin of the fruit, and it is like a pinprick. It's about the size of it. It's very easy to overlook, and then when that egg hatches, the larva does tunnel through the fruit, and eventually the fruit will rot and fall off the tree. And that's a summer problem. That's a problem that usually comes on about 1st of July, and then we'll see it through July, August, and even into September. It's very possible that that's it. Insecticidal soap will have absolutely no impact on that, so that's not an option. There is a product out there that is approved for organic use. You may have to look around for it, maybe even go on the internet. And different companies produce it, so it goes by different brand names. But the active ingredient is spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. And again, that is approved. That's a natural product, and it is approved for certified organic. There are formulations of that which are not approved for certified organic, only because of some of the other components which are in the spray. But the active ingredient is the same, whether you go with the organic approved or not. And that is a product that you would start putting on about the 1st of July and probably need to do it about every 2 weeks into the middle of August in order to get good control of apple maggot.
Yeah, I was doing it every 2 weeks with the insecticidal soap, but like I said, it didn't seem to have any.
No.
Your description really fits what I'm having, so I'll look for this spinosad.
Okay.
All right, great. Good luck. Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Bob. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or even a photograph there. We're visiting with a couple of members of the UW Fruit Team today, Rebecca Harbert, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison, and Dan Marr, who is an Emeritus Professor of Entomology here on the UW-Madison campus. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have lots of fruit-related questions here on the Ideas Network on Garden Talk with our two guests, Rebecca Harbert and Dan Marr. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in today and for your questions. Barb in Little Suamico has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Hi, Barb. Thank you for calling.
Actually, I have an answer about the Wolf River apple.
All right.
My husband was born in 1941 in Green Bay, and his family land included his grandfather's apple orchard, huge full-size trees, and a lot of them were Wolf River apples. And my husband still talks about the pies his mother would make. You take these Wolf River apples, which are real hard and bitter when you first pick them. You put them down in clean sawdust or clean straw in the fruit cellar, and in January, they're perfect for making pie.
Ah.
So they sweeten up over time. But don't even try to eat them when you first pick them off the tree.
That's great.
It's a great story.
He understood, you know, he's not sure, but he was always told that the Wolf River, you know, cultivar, the apple itself, was something that was produced first along in the Shiocton area of Wisconsin, which the Wolf River cuts through.
Right.
The name.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Barb, thank
Great.
You.
Wonderful. You're welcome. Thank you, Barb.
Appreciate that call. All right, so now we know a little more about the Wolf River, and
That's
I
right.
and I like that idea of sawdust for
until January. January, like a fine wine.
Let them ripen in the cellar.
Yeah, let them ripen in the cellar. Bernie and DePere, it's your turn. Hi, Bernie.
Good morning, everybody. I have two questions on raspberries, please. Mm-hmm. How can I tell if they're spring or summer bearing? They seem to have a heavy crop in the spring, but then they produce raspberries again in the fall. Like right now, there's berries on the bushes. And the second question is, should I prune them back all the way to the ground?
Okay, what do you
think? So a couple of good questions. So summer-bearing raspberries have a two-year cycle. So a summer-bearing raspberry will produce a cane in that first year that doesn't produce any fruit. It will just produce leaves, and it'll be a single cane. And then that cane will overwinter, and then the second year, it will send out laterals, so little side branches that actually bear the fruit. And on those summer bearing, the fruit is usually, it's always born on those side shoots. Fall bearing raspberries have just a one-year cycle, so they'll send up that cane, and then they'll flower and fruit on that cane in the same year. So they will produce fruit right on the cane itself, and they'll produce fruit at the top of that cane. So you'll see the fruit much higher. Fall-bearing raspberries can, if you overwinter them, they'll produce a crop again in the spring. So I'm guessing if you're getting a fall crop, you probably have fall-bearing raspberries, but you just haven't been cutting them back. But look at where the fruit is produced on those canes, and that will give you some indication of what type they are. So for fall-bearing raspberries, you can cut them right down to the ground. You just mow them off. That's one of the great beauties of fall-bearing raspberries. It's easy, and you don't have to worry about getting them through the winter and winter damage. So fall-bearing, you cut all the way back. Summer-bearing raspberries, you cut them all the way down to the ground after they've fruited, and then you just leave those canes that don't have any fruit on them to produce fruit for the next year.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I think I understand it now.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Janet in Oak Creek, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a brown turkey fig that I'm bringing in for the second year.
Okay.
When I bought the tree, the nursery people told me to not repot it. And then they gave me, because I was concerned with bugs, you know, might be in the soil, they sold me a insecticide granules, which I was concerned with using because I don't want to obviously, you know, have anything in my fruit. So I was just hoping that you might have some suggestions as far as what I should do to either repot it or, you know, besides squirting it with a hose to get anything that might be on the leaves off. Any other suggestions?
Okay. Dan?
From the bug perspective, there are some things. First of all, keep in mind that fig trees aren't native to this part of the world, and so most of the bugs that get on fig trees don't get on fig trees here. But there are some of what we call our generalist pests that are happy feeding on most anything, which could get on those fig trees, and you could bring them in the house, and then they could spread to your other houseplants and whatnot. So I think unless you actually are seeing a problem with a fig tree, and considering you do have a concern with the insecticide granules in the soil, that I might just hold off on those and maybe only use them if a problem ever comes about. Yes, there are insects that can move into the soil. Usually they're more nuisance insects, things like sow bugs and things like that. We take a lot of our plants outside for the summertime, and we're bringing in all kinds of critters with them this time of the year when we're moving everything back in. And they just kind of disappear over the course of the winter, mm-hmm. I guess, and that's how we deal with them. But if you find that there is a problem, then you may need to use an insecticidal drench or a granule applied to the soil. But I would do that fairly early, maybe early September or so that that material has a chance to do its work and then dissipates from the soil before you bring the potted plant back into the house.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We have a Facebook question from Danielle in Green Bay. I've planted alpine strawberries in a 5-quart pot indoors with standard potting soil. Plant's 2 months old and has 4 long vines that come out of the ground. There are plenty of leaves, and the tips there are bundles that appear to be flowering or fruit parts, but they have not produced any fruit. Do you have any tips to grow good strawberries? What do you think, Rebecca?
Sure. So if they're wild strawberries, alpine strawberries, there are some that are not, they don't have perfect flowers, essentially. So if they're male flowers, you're not going to get any fruit off of them. If they're female flowers and you don't have any male flowers around, you're also not going to get any fruit off of them. If they're producing flowers and they're perfect, you should be seeing fruit develop on them at some point. However, if they're inside, they don't have a whole lot of light this time of year, it gets a little bit harder to grow them. With strawberries also, all of them have to have a cold period as well. So if you keep them in your house, you're only going to get one crop of fruit off of them, and then they're not going to fruit again until they have that cold period. So that is a requirement that all strawberries have.
So they need to, if you got it potted like this, what do you do? Set it out in the garage?
Yeah, so you can set it out in the garage and let it sit out for a couple months during the winter, and then you can bring it in again if you want to keep it inside and get fruit inside. But you have to give it that cold period.
Mike and Rhinelander, it's your turn next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I've got a question on some young apple trees. I have about 8 of them that I planted along a food plot for deer and fenced them in, of course, so they don't get eaten in the broomsticks. They've starting to get rather tall inside of their fencing, 10, 12 feet high. 4 of them are semi-dwarfs, a couple of Cortlands, a Red Baron, and I forget what the other one is. The other 4 are crabs, 2 Whitneys and 2 Centennials. So where do you start pruning them? From the top down, get the little branches at the bottom, all the stuff out of the middle?
Yeah, so if you want to prune them for size, you want to do big cuts instead of a lot of little cuts. When you do a lot of heading cuts, which is basically you just cut back the length of a branch, what you end up doing is actually stimulating a whole lot more growth. And so you end up with a lot of top growth. So if your trees are getting really tall and spindly, you want to cut back branches all the way back down to
the main trunk.
If it's really out of control. So you want to try to find that balance between cutting it to get the size under control, but bearing in mind that when you do make cuts, you stimulate growth as well. That's the response of the tree. So if you've got a lot of branches down low, do you have one main trunk that is going up the center?
Yeah, they're all pretty good that way.
Okay. So you've got what we call a central leader training system, essentially. That if you want to control the height of it, you can bend that top over as well, tie the top so that it bends down, and that changes the hormone balance in the tree and will actually slow the growth in terms of the height. And then you'll go through and cut back branches back down to that main central leader to try to rein in the size a little bit. And you should be pruning, do a light pruning every year is really the best way to manage the tree, so you don't get to the point where you suddenly have a whole lot of growth and then it's a lot harder to rein in if things get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And this is to be done late spring?
That's right. Yeah, so late winter, early spring is when you want to do it, before the trees break bud, when they're still dormant.
Okay. Well, I had a couple of them that the bears got a hold of and snapped them off.
Oh.
Well, that's one way to make a tree smaller, too.
Yeah. they made them a little too smaller. I guess I might as well just cut that off clean and see what comes back.
Yeah, depending on how far down it went, it's tough for them to recover. And a lot of time you end up getting the rootstock producing the suckers, and you're not getting the tree you think you've got.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Kathy emailed us from Madison. Says, I have a hardy kiwi and a grape that have gotten overgrown and don't produce, or didn't produce this year anyway, very well. They're stretching all over each other. Can I drastically prune both this winter? I don't want to kill either one. My hardy kiwi is at least 15 years old.
Yeah, so that's great. Hardy kiwi is a wonderful fruit crop. The grape, you can certainly prune back pretty hard. They will grow like gangbusters fairly consistently. Hardy kiwi are a little more slow growing. They're not quite as vigorous as the grapes are. So my guess is your grapes are going to do a lot better with a real heavy pruning back than the kiwi is. So I would probably start with the grape and get some of that material out of there. You can be quite aggressive with grapes in pruning them. The hardy kiwi, you can prune it back, but I would do it to a much lighter degree than the grape because they're not quite as vigorous as grapevines are.
Nancy in Dubuque, Iowa. We are turning to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I live in Dubuque, but we have a cabin in northern Wisconsin. And on either side of the driveway, we have a long driveway, and we've got wild raspberries growing there. And I'm wondering if I need to prune those the way you do, you know, cultivated raspberries. And if so, how do I tell a new cane from an old cane? And then the second part of my question is that over the last couple of years, ferns have started to move in and have taken over from the raspberries. How do I get rid of the ferns and keep the raspberries?
With difficulty.
Yeah, it's hard.
So I think ferns can, you just have to dig out those crowns with ferns. There's no real easy answer there.
Okay.
with getting rid of that. Raspberries, to tell if it's an old cane or a new raspberry cane has a very green stem to it. You can see it's still a bit herbaceous. And as it ages, it gets woodier and barkier. And a lot of them will actually just completely die once they've fruited. And you can snap them so they'll be dry. And so it's usually fairly easy to tell old canes from the new canes. And you can certainly treat them the same way you would a cultivated patch.
So can I do that this time of year? I mean, if it snaps, it's old and it's okay. And if it's not snapping, then it's a new one. Leave it.
Yeah. So if you've got canes that have fruited and they're dead already, you can take them out and if nothing has been done, you've probably got a lot of canes in there that are just dead canes that are sitting there, and you can take those out anytime. The ones that you want to wait a little bit longer are canes that have actively been growing this year. Raspberries will move all the nutrients that they have in those canes back down into the root system. So if you cut them off before they've fully gone dormant and fully senesced or died, you lose the nutrients that were in those canes. And instead of having them go back down to the roots, you basically remove it with the cane. So you just want to make sure that when you do prune raspberries, they're truly dormant and truly dried out. And it's usually fairly easy to tell.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Judy in Grafton, we are turning to you. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm calling again about the mysterious disappearing grapes. I had covered my grapevines with row covers because a couple years ago, the grapes had all disappeared just as I was ready to pick them. And so this year, I covered everything with row covers, and I mean I close pinned the row covers to the grapevines along the top and I around the bottom, and I really had it encased, right? And I came to pick them, and everyone was picked off the bunch. The bunch, you saw the bunch there, but the grapes were gone. And, you know, I'm wondering what else can I do to protect those grapes?
Dan, what do you think was eaten on those grapes?
I don't know. Where's Scott Craven when we need him?
Yeah.
It was so funny. There was the row covers were not disturbed one bit. There was not one grape on the ground. They were just gone.
So I have actually seen birds jump on netting so that the grapes actually fall off. When the grapes are very ripe, they'll fall off and then go eat them off of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what's happening there, but
well, that's a
you've
good
got some
guess.
Savvy birds, I suppose.
Yeah, we had cardinals that were really, really feasted on the grapes at our yard.
So you think that they could get under that row cover and they just cleaned them up? I mean, this is along my house, so I have that row cover close to the house. They could hardly have...
Well, they could jump on the roll cover, though, and knock the grapes off.
And then pick them up on the ground.
Yes.
So what else do you think I could do?
You could get a cat.
That is a very good question.
Yeah, it's difficult. The bird netting is usually fairly effective in keeping the birds off, especially if you're...
This was the roll cover. I mean, you can't get through that.
Right.
Yeah.
The squat, you know.
Yeah, know what it is.
There are some physical bird repellents, like fake owls and streamers and balloons and things like that.
That I could put on.
do a relatively good job, although... Many birds sometimes get accustomed to those after a period of time. So
you need to move, mm-hmm. change them up.
You need to change them around and don't put them up until really the grapes are ready to go so that the birds don't get used to them ahead of time.
Well, that's a great idea. Okay, I'll try that.
Good luck.
Can I ask another question?
Should get a trail camera out there and see what's,
right.
see what's actually attacking those grapes of yours. I it'd be worth the price just to find out.
My neighbors swear they haven't touched them. I have another quick question about my kiwi. This lady just called about her kiwi. I prune mine back really a lot every winter or March or so. And I have gotten now only two or three kiwi. Do you think I'm doing it too aggressively? And if I don't prune so much, will it produce?
Yeah, that could certainly be. When you prune back really heavily, they tend to put more resources into growing the vine back again rather than producing the fruit. So yeah, this winter I would try just easing up a little bit on the pruning and see if you get some more production off of that.
Thank you so much for all your help.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Joya in Fitchburg, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask her a question about, does she know anything about Althea tree, flowering tree?
Altheas?
Yeah.
In terms of if they're hardy here? Or?
Zone 4? Can it be grown in zone 4?
I would be highly skeptical.
Okay.
I'm not, I don't know for certain with Althea specifically. But there are very few, if any, figs that are actually hardy here. So I would be
this
highly
susceptible. Althea, I'm not familiar with that. Is that a type of fig?
No. It is. It's like I think it's the hibiscus family. But it can be grown in the tree. I have seen it sold in Chapco, but I wasn't sure that it can be grown in Zone 4. I know I've seen it around Madison in one or two places only, but I didn't see it in Old Vic Garden or, you know, or any horticultural garden or in Janesville. But
yeah, I'm not sure. And I think you have to be careful when you see things. Just because you see something in a garden center doesn't mean that it's hardy here. So really, I'm not sure.
Actually, next weekend, next Friday and Saturday, Bruce Allison will be our guest. He's a tree guy, and he will probably know. So, Joya, if you want to kind of hang on for another week, we can probably get an answer from him on that. Good luck. Thank you for calling. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or a question there, and we'd love to hear from you. An email from Don in Door County: my heirloom Hilton raspberry canes that should be producing fruit only in the upcoming summer have in the past 5 years, instead of going into dormancy in late October, early November, are starting to prematurely set flowers in the first 3 weeks of December, then, of course, freezing. Fruit set in the coming season will be minimal, the coming spring. Weather such as abnormal wet or drought or high wind seems to have greater negative impact on these apparently overstressed canes.
Yeah, you can see this happening, and some cultivars are more prone to it than others, where they'll set sort of a fall crop. And in years where you have a warm fall is when you see it the most. So last year we actually saw a fair amount, and we have seen some this year as well. And that it tends to be a cultivar characteristic, and there's not a whole lot you can do to prevent it from happening. Just making sure that you can do everything you can to try to keep those canes unstressed in the coming seasons, so making sure they've got enough water in there.
Jerry in Fort Atkinson, your turn now. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
A two-part question here. I think I know the answer to one already, but I'm asking it anyways. On peaches, is there any eating variety peaches that will survive our Wisconsin winters for more than a year or two? And a second part of that is pears. What variety would you recommend as far as the best eating pear that is self-pollinating?
So, a couple good questions. Peaches, people really want to grow peaches. And I think you just need to get a summer home somewhere down south or something to fulfill
Georgia.
That dream. It's really tough. They just don't survive the winter, but they also have a very hard time producing flowers and getting through that frost period. So peaches are a really tough go, and it's very difficult to find a peach that's going to get through any more than 3 years or so, because usually they're so stressed that it just succumbs to winter injury after a couple of years. Pears, on the other hand, there's lots you can do with pears. There are plenty of hardy pears. Parker, Gourmet, Luscious are some good hardy pears that you can grow here in Wisconsin. There are lots of successful pear trees around, so that I would absolutely encourage you to try.
And they're all self-pollinating, and you only need one?
No, so pears you actually do need to have a cross-pollinator with, so you need the two different varieties.
Oh.
So they'll pollinate. If you get one variety of pear, you'll just have to have a different variety or cultivar that can produce the pollens, and they'll pollinate each other. And, if your neighbor has a pear tree, that's probably sufficient, and you can use their pollen. But if there's no pear trees in your area, then you'll have to get two.
Okay, I have a neighbor and a friend in Milwaukee who had a pear tree in her backyard.
That might be a little far.
And there was no other pear tree anywhere near, and she always got this absolutely luscious, nice eating pear on it, and I assumed it was self-pollinating.
There was one hiding.
There's someone
somewhere.
Hiding. That's
there was
right.
one hiding in the bushes somewhere. Either that, or that tree should have been. I think a lot of people would make a lot of money on a tree like that if it actually would do that. There you go, Jerry. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We are talking fruit today with Rebecca Harbit, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison, and Dan Marr, Emeritus Professor of Entomology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your fruit question at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as well. An email from Keith. I plan to buy some blueberry plants next spring. Any advice for types that are resistant to bugs and diseases? And then when one has blueberries, what type of bugs does one have to be careful about? And what do you think, Dan?
First thing I'm going to do is hand it back to Rebecca, because I think hardiness is really important with blueberries as well. Make sure you get varieties that are going to do well in Wisconsin conditions. So Rebecca, you want to?
Yeah, sure. So blueberries are there are plenty of blueberry hardy blueberry varieties that we can grow here in Wisconsin. Sometimes with the biggest issues is snow load. So the high bush blueberries that tend to be taller sometimes don't do very well in areas that have heavy snowfall, because the snow will actually break and damage the branches. And then you end up coming into disease issues because of the damage that occurs on the canes. There are half high blueberries, which are great for more northern areas and are hardy and do extremely well in those regions. And there are many, many different cultivars, Patriot, Northern. There's lots of blueberry cultivars that are out there, that any of the half-high blueberries would be appropriate for Wisconsin?
As far as the bug question, fortunately, blueberries are pretty much insect-free. I say that with some caution. There are a couple of insects that can attack blueberries, attack the fruit directly. One is actually cranberry fruit worm, a pest that attacks our commercial cranberry crop in Wisconsin, will also get over to blueberry. Cranberry and blueberry are very closely related to each other. But there's also a type of fruit fly called blueberry fruit fly. So both of those can injure the fruit, but they're a bit uncommon, and especially here in Wisconsin. My wife and I have been growing blueberries for probably over 20 years, just a few bushes in the backyard, and usually the biggest concern that we have from a pest perspective is the birds. As soon as they start to color up, the birds will come in and take quite a few of them, so we do put bird netting over them, but we've never treated for any insects. Occasionally we'll get a little bit of damage, but it's nothing that we are significantly concerned about. So that's a good one to try if you don't like to spray for bugs very much.
Garrett in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Garrett.
Hi there. How's it going today?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. Hey, I have some raspberry plants that have been planted about maybe 6 to 7 years ago, and I have yet to get any fruit off of them. I also do trim them on a regular basis. Any reason for that?
So when you say you trim them on a regular basis, what do you...
I mean, once a year I go through and I weed out the brown dead canes.
You prune
and,
them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, prune them. Mm-hmm.
Well, are they... Do the canes actually seem happy and healthy?
They seem like they're... I get they're very strong and green in the springtime, and then towards the summer they seem to get more... yellow or darker, like a kind of yellow greenish color.
And what is the soil like that they're sitting in? Is it wet by any chance?
No, not really. Just a typical clay Wisconsin soil.
So raspberries, there are a few root diseases that are pretty aggressive on raspberries. And if you have raspberries that have a root disease, that will cause a lot of stress in them that they just can't. Once you get in that full summer period where the water demands are really high, they have a hard time getting enough water up through a compromised root system to actually meet the needs of the plant. So it sounds like the plants are getting stressed once you get into that season, and they won't set fruit if they're under a lot of stress. So my guess is you've got something going on, most likely in the soil and in the roots. So next year, I would probably dig up some of those roots and send in a sample to the disease diagnostic clinic and have them have a look at it and see what's going on down there.
Garrett, do you get flowers and just not any fruit, or do you not get any flowers as well?
No, they flower quite heavily, and then I just get no fruit from them.
Hmm.
And it's not like they disappear. Once in a while, I'll get a couple of the little nuggets, if you will. You know how raspberries are made of nuggets. I get a couple of nuggets that will spread, but then that's
it.
What was the source of your plants originally?
To be honest with you, they were planted by my wife prior to me knowing her, so I'm going to guess she bought them at like Stein's or something of that nature.
Okay. Raspberries can accumulate viruses over a period of time, which can definitely affect production. And it's important. The reason I ask that is if she acquired the plants from a reputable nursery, they were probably certified virus-free stock. But if she acquired plants from someone else who was growing plants, it's very possible that the plants came with virus in them already, and there's just been a decline in the health of the plants over the years. So that's another possibility. Mm-hmm. But what Rebecca said also is possibly looking for root diseases, I think, is a good way to go also.
And where do I send the roots to?
The Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. you can find them.
You can go online and find them. We probably have it posted on our Facebook page. We can put that up. Judith will put that up on our Facebook page. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll have it posted for you.
Or you could work through your Milwaukee County Extension office also. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lisa in Black Earth, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Thank you. Just quickly, raspberries also, I live on a very steep, high hill, which is quite eroded, so the soil is terrible. And I moved some ever-bearing raspberries from where I lived in rural Wanakee for a quarter of a century, and they just aren't performing, and I mulch them, and I prune them properly. I've checked very carefully about that. And I just don't seem to have them producing. And I don't know if I need to move them.
Well, raspberries on a steep, rocky slope are, that's a challenge. So raspberries do like to have organic matter and moisture. So do you irrigate them during the season?
Probably not as much. Probably not as much as I should.
Yeah, and so...
Because the canes are healthy, but...
They're not producing fruit. Are they flowering?
Yes, but it's still, you know, I think it may be the soil is just not, there's just not enough soil there, even though it's amended and composted. And
yeah, I would suspect that you probably, the conditions of that soil aren't great. And it also could be that the pH might not be right as well. If you see, are the canes green throughout the season, or do you start to get...
They turn a little red.
Yeah, so you probably have some nutrient deficiencies in there as well, that I think the soil is just not well suited to raspberries in that location.
All right, sorry. Well, I shall move them, and thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And we're moving on to Mary in Waukesha County. Hi, Mary.
Hi. We have moved into Waukesha County, and the people before us are having our home now. They have a lot of grapevines, but they were kind of on the ground. I don't know if they were not dealing with the grapes or whatever. And so my concern is there a way that I could transplant these somewhere else? And I don't want to shock anything, you know, and cutting back idea. I don't really know exactly what route to take on that and when that should be done.
So it sounds like these are fairly large vines at this point then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So transplanting is probably going to be tough.
Okay.
I think that would be a difficult route to take. If you just don't like the location they're in, I think I'd probably just start over again and get some new vines. If you want to keep them there, you can certainly do
whack
some
them back.
That's right. Do some heavy pruning and really start to rein them in a little bit more. Grapes they can tolerate pretty heavy pruning. You might not get a lot of fruit. If you're really aggressive on the pruning, you might not get a lot of fruit next year.
Mm-hmm. When do you do the pruning?
So the pruning should be done late winter, early spring. The longer you wait with grapes, the better. They do tend to have some, they can suffer from some winter damage. So the longer that you wait to do that pruning, the less risk you have on winter damage on some of those buds. So you want to wait late winter, early spring, mm-hmm. before they've broken bud is when you want to do it.
Okay.
And you can be pretty aggressive with them.
Oh, wonderful. I'll try that first then before anything else.
Okay, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Ann in Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Ann. Ann, are you there?
Hi, yes. We have some blueberry bushes that are very, very tall. They're 6 to 7 feet tall, and we got them, they were there when we bought the lot, and this is up in Endeavor. And I was wondering how I can prune these back. Right now we get those that the sandhill cranes don't get, which are very, very tall.
Mm-hmm.
But how far can I prune these back? Should they be shorter? To have more berries or?
So blueberries typically will produce the best on canes that are 2 to 8 years old, and then they start to go down after that. So there's two approaches you can take. If you've got a blueberry bush that is completely out of control and you just want an easy way to rein it in, you can coppice it and just cut it right back and let it come back again. But you're going to have a few years or a couple years of no fruit, essentially. Alternatively, you can go through and start with cutting out the oldest, biggest, gnarliest canes that are on that bush and really thin it out. And that will help rein in some of that growth. So one of the reasons they get so tall is if it's really dense and it hasn't been managed, the branches sort of will continue to look for light and they kind of get crowded out of that space that you actually can reach in. So if you go through and thin, you can either cut the whole thing back if you're willing to wait a little while to get some new canes back up again. But otherwise, just go through and start with the oldest and work your way back and leave canes that are in the age range of two years old, or new canes to around eight or 10 years old. And you can usually tell the age of the cane just by the greenness of it, how barky it is, and also how thick it is.
And thank you for calling. Our guest today, the couple of members of the fruit team at UW-Madison, Rebecca Harbutt and Dan Marr. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and on this edition of Garden Talk, we're zeroing in on fruit. Rebecca Harbutt, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison, one of our guests today. The other guest, Dan Marr, Emeritus Professor of Entomology at the UW-Madison. So if you have some questions about your fruit trees or maybe your strawberries or your raspberries, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And Margie in Eagle River has been waiting a while, so let's go right to her. Hi, Margie. Thank you for calling. Margie, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost her. Let's go to Jenny in Tomahawk. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Thanks for having this program on. I always enjoy you.
Thank you.
I have two crabapple. Well, I have more than that, but the person who was mowing the lawn decided to prune them. Oh, this was about a month ago. And I think it said don't prune while the tree is still, you know, like growing or whatever. And I wonder if this is going to really hurt the tree. I don't like the way it looks, but the way they look, but I wonder if it's going to hurt the tree. And if it does, is there anything I can do about it?
So ideally, we prune in the winter. You can certainly do summer pruning. It has a different effect on the tree when you summer prune. So when you prune in the summertime, it tends to have more of a reduced growth effect on it, rather than pruning in the winter actually stimulates growth on the tree, which is why we typically do it in the wintertime. The other thing with pruning it in the summer is you have that pruning wound that then is there for the warm and very hot part of the season, and so you can introduce some disease issues. But the tree will likely be just fine. I can't help you with the way it looks, but I suspect it will probably do okay. It will just limit the growth that happens on that tree more than anything.
Mm-hmm. I see.
There you go. Good luck with it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Diane in Delavan, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I just bought 6 red raspberry thornless candies. Thornless candy red raspberries. I just got them. I turned the radio on, and here you guys are talking about raspberries. I need to know how to do this right. The soil that I have here is dark and rich. I also have soil that is, I think I was going to use it, unless you advise me not to, from a burn pile of wood. I've burned a lot of brushes, and the soil is very, very dark. And very rich, but my ordinary soil is also dark and rich. I don't have clay or gravel or anything like that here. It's very, very beautiful soil. And I was wondering how to plant these red thornless can be raspberries properly. I've got a fence. I don't know if I need the fence, but I thought I did. So I do have a fence that isn't being used in basically not full sun, but midday full sun, and some protection from the sun. The fence is placed in such an area where there is good air circulation going all around it. I just thought that that would be the perfect spot for the raspberries. And I also don't know if they are the summer or the fall raspberries. And I really don't know how to take care of them. And I was going to try to find out how to do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe we've got some advice for you here. What do you think, Rebecca?
Okay, so in terms of soil, raspberries like to have slightly acidic soil, and they really need to have well-drained soil. So sometimes when you see really dark, rich soil, it looks absolutely wonderful, but if it stays wet all a little bit too long, and if it's moist all the time, the raspberries aren't going to do well. They tend to be fairly susceptible to a lot of root diseases. So one of the primary considerations is the drainage that you actually have at that location. So as long as you know that soil has good drainage, you don't have water sitting in there. If you do have poor drainage, you can do things like mounding up the soil, doing a sort of raised bed type thing to help some of that, the water movement go through. And then the other thing is to have a slightly acidic soil also helps enormously. They like high organic matter. That's certainly the case. But drainage is by far the number one concern with raspberries. A fence can be good, particularly if it's thornless. It's a little more appealing to browsers that are out there in the wintertime looking for something green to munch on. They do actually like full sun. You'll get the best fruit production if you plant them in a full sun location rather than one that just gets partial sun. You just won't quite get the sweetness in those raspberries. You'll still get fruit off of there, but you probably won't get as much, and it probably won't be quite as sweet if it's not in a full sun location.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Margie in Eagle River, on to you now. Hi.
Hi. You were talking about the apple maggot earlier.
Yes.
And I was wondering if those apples are still safe to eat.
I guess the question is how much signs of activity you see inside the fruit when you cut them open.
Okay, probably not real much, and maybe only on one side.
If you can cut that out, and you can still certainly eat that, the contamination doesn't go from one side to the other. The problem with apple maggot is that when the eggs are first laid, the insects are so incredibly tiny that they're virtually almost invisible, the little larvae that tunnel through the fruit. And you actually see the little fine brown trails through the fruit before you actually see the insects. And those brown trails actually result from microorganisms that the insect carries along with it. And the insect actually doesn't start growing very quickly until the fruit starts to decay a little bit. And that's what the microorganisms do for the apple maggot. And so as long as you're not seeing too much decay, the fruit are pretty good. In fact, I suspect that there are lots of people who eat lots of apple maggots every year without knowing it off their backyard trees. But the other issue that's related to this is that because those insects are in there in storage, they will decompose much more quickly than a non-infested apple fruit. So I would use them as quickly as possible. And if there are some areas that are definitely a little, you see the trailing a little bit more than others, then just cut that out. But there's no toxins or anything like that that are associated with it.
There you go. Thanks, Margie. Jean in Sauk City, on to you now. Hi, Jean.
Hello. I have a question about a cherry tree that I have. It's about 35 years old. And every year it gets an insect that bores into it, lays a larva, and it's a little tiny white maggot when I go to pick the fruit.
So the,
I'm wondering if there isn't a way that I can deal with this without using a pesticide, some type of organic thing that I could do.
The insects that you're seeing are actually inside the cherry fruit.
The worm is. It's a little white larva.
Yeah. It's officially called the cherry maggot, or cherry.
Oh.
It's the larva of the cherry fruit fly, which is very closely related to the apple maggot that we were just talking about. They're very, very closely related, actually. It's very, very difficult. This is an insect. There's actually two related species that come in and attack cherry. And anytime the cherry is full size and just starting to ripen up and right up until harvest time, they can become infested with these insects. And they're native insects. They're very common. They occur throughout the state. And really, it's very difficult to protect the fruit without using some sort of a protectant spray. There are some products. The product that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about apple maggot that has the active ingredient spinosad in it is one that is, if you get the right formulation, it is approved for organic use. It's a natural product. And that's relatively effective against this insect, so that might be a way that you could go.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that again? What's the name of the product?
Yeah, the active ingredient is called spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. Now, there's different companies that make it in an organic formulation, so you'll find it in different under different brand names. But if you go to your garden center, I'm sure that they'll be able to have a product that has that active ingredient in it.
There you go. Thank you, Gene, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Oak Park, Illinois. Hello to you.
Hello. Good afternoon. I've got a question about an apple pest. I've got a small Honeycrisp tree, and every year it produces a lot of fruit. But each one, every single fruit, is attacked by this pest that, according to a farmer's market farmer I talked to, is a plum curculio, I think it's called. It mm-hmm. leaves a very distinctive half-moon-shaped scratch.
You got it. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I wanted to know, how am I going to be able to battle this pest, because it gets every last apple on the tree.
The problem with plum curculio is that most people don't recognize that they've got the problem until harvest time, when it's an early-season insect pest. The damage is done right after bloom. And that's when we need to think about protecting the fruit. By right after bloom, I mean when the fruit are maybe no larger than the size of a kitchen match head or something like that. They can start as early as that. And there's kind of good news and bad news relating to plum curculio. Oftentimes on apples, and you are talking about apples, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Oftentimes on apples, in fact, usually, the plum curculio larva, which should be hatching out of an egg that has been laid in that little disfiguration that you see there, that's actually killed by the fruit itself. Plum curculio gets its name because plum is its native host, and apple is a fruit that it's not used to because apples are not native here, and the female lays her eggs in apple fruit anyway, and the apple fruit are unsuitable for the development of the larvae. So the scar is oftentimes only external. And if you don't mind a few scars on the fruit, especially if you're using them for cooking or even for eating, you could just cut that out. It's usually just a surface blemish. So that's a possibility, and a lot of homeowners are certainly happy to go that route. But if you'd rather have unblemished fruit, or if the population is really big and causing a lot of damage, then it's going to require a fruit protectant. There are a variety of insecticides that can be used for this purpose. But the important thing to do it is to start your applications right after bloom, as soon as most of the petals have fallen off the apple trees. And then do another application about 10 days to 2 weeks later. Another problem with this insect is that it's very irregular as far as when it makes its emergence in the springtime, and it's not very predictable. So some years it's active right at the end of bloom, and sometimes it takes 2 or 3 weeks after the end of bloom before it becomes active, and then it can stay active for another 2 to 3 weeks after that. So generally speaking, two applications starting right after bloom and then 2 weeks later. But in some years, you may still end up with some damage even a couple of weeks after that.
Hmm. Do you have a suggestion on the type of what pesticide I should use?
This is actually an insect that's very easy to kill as long as the coverage is good and the timing is proper. And so I would just go to your local garden center and find out what particular products that they have available for use on apple trees. And most anything will do a pretty good job with this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. An email from Mark from Montfort. Please tell the varieties of the sweetest cherries that will make it in southwest Wisconsin. What do you think, Rebecca?
Well, sweet cherries they can be a little bit tough to grow because they're not always that hardy. So one of the things to think about actually before you think about what type of cherry you're growing is actually the type of rootstock that you're using. So there's rootstocks that are more hardy than others are. So the Mazard rootstock, for example, is a really good one to use. And just think about that in addition to the type of variety that you're actually growing. In terms of varieties, there's... Now I'm totally blanking on all my sweet cherry varieties. There's things like... Some of the Rainiers will not do great out here. They tend to be not very hardy at all. There's actually a publication that is on the Extension website that has a whole list of sweet cherry varieties that are hardy in southern Wisconsin. It's called Varieties for Southern Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin that you can get through the UW Extension fruit website.
So you go to the Learning Store?
The Learning Store, that's right.
UW Extension Learning Store, and you'll find it right there.
That's right.
All right. And we've got Denise and Baraboo. What's the least toxic way to get good apples? I don't want to use a lot of chemicals. My one tree gets apples that fall off when they get about the size of golf balls. The other tree has brown spots on the skin of the apples. Is there an organic approach to growing apples? I always clean up the fallen apples and leaves. And what type of feeding do my trees need? Can I use composted horse manure around them? Well, Dan, what do you think?
First of all, starting with the kind of low input as far as insects and diseases, I would again encourage you to get our publication on home apple fruit pest management, which is again available through the UW Extension Learning Store. It's a fairly detailed publication that goes through a variety of different approaches from fairly high input to fairly low input. It's almost impossible to grow apples in Wisconsin without some sort of pest management because there are some really serious diseases that attack apples and there are some very serious insects that attack apples. And no, it doesn't make any difference where you live. You're bound to have one or more of these types of pest problems. One of the first issues is to find out what is actually causing the problems. And if you can get some diagnostic help on that through your county extension office or whatever, then we can maybe tailor make a program a little bit more for you. But I would really encourage you to get that UW Extension publication because it does go through a variety of options. And I'll hand it over to Rebecca for the fertilization question.
Yeah, so apple trees, depending on how big they are, if it's a dwarf tree, they do require some fertilization, but they actually require less than the big old standard trees, just because there's less tree that you're actually supporting in those tiny dwarf trees. But some nitrogen application, nitrogen is really the primary nutrient that you're looking for in terms of providing for the trees. One of the challenges is if you put on too much nitrogen, you can also introduce some increased susceptibility to diseases as well. So if you've got a small dwarf tree, you can often get away with just a small application of nitrogen early in the spring or using an organic source, putting a mulch down or something like that will provide nitrogen to that tree. and water as well is another thing. In terms of the golf ball size apples falling out, trees do that naturally as well, that they will drop some of their fruit because they typically will set more fruit than they will actually fully ripen and fully produce. So you will see some degree of apple drop that does happen just naturally.
Jim in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Larry, thanks for taking my call. I do have white flesh peaches, and just so happens I had a banner crop this year. Last year at this time, I was listening, and a caller suggested that I use Epsom salts for the leaf curl because it was really, really deafening my production and everything. And it worked like a charm, okay? Do I want to repeat it again this year? I put it down around Thanksgiving. And then I have a second question about winnowing the yield before they mature.
The second question is what? I'm sorry, what was the...
I would like to winnow the yield before they mature, like, you know, like in early summer or something like that, because I had bushels, and they didn't all mature, Larry.
I gotcha. You know,
a lot of them just finished up as golf ball size.
I gotcha. Okay. All right, Rebecca, do you want to start?
Yeah, in terms of thinning the crop, that's a good thing to do when fairly early on, before the tree actually invests too much in those fruit that you're going to take off. So you really get the benefit of having the fruit that remains actually being a good size. So shortly after bloom is a good time to go through and thin if you've got a really heavy bloom and fruit set. So once you've seen that fruit has actually set and you know you're going to have a crop, if you do it during bloom, you can get a frost and you end up thinning all that stuff you were really in need of. So wait till the fruit have set. But once you've seen the set, then you can go through and thin the fruit that early. And it's actually best to do it that early because then you'll have the biggest impact on the quality of the fruit that you actually leave on the tree. In terms of the Epsom salt, I don't know what to tell you.
I suspect if it worked this year, do it the same way next year.
Okay, I will do that then.
There could be some buildup. That's my only issue is buildup in the soil. Because I know like boric acid, if you put borax in that, I know on the soil more than one year in a row, you're going to get...
Yeah, salts will accumulate in the soil and they can burn roots. If you are seeing that, you'll likely... Do you have vegetative growth under the tree?
Oh, grass.
Grass. So if you are getting salt accumulation, you'll likely see the grass start to show some sort of symptom of salt accumulation before the tree actually is affected by it because their roots are down
like
a little bit deeper.
Like a yellowing or something.
That's
like
right,
that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for being there. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Ariel in Wales, have you got a quick question for us?
Yeah, hello. I was calling about pear and plum trees.
Yeah? What about them?
We acquired a bunch of fruit trees with the house that we purchased 2 years ago. And each spring they flower and they seem to be great. And then the fruit starts coming and the pears look like they're all blistered.
Yeah.
And then the plum trees, we have a really horrible case of the Japanese beetles.
Here we are running out of time. Is there a publication through UW Extension that will help our listener?
Yeah, there is actually a publication you can get on the Learning Store. It's called Growing Pears.
Growing Pears in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. And then there's another one that is Growing Plums, Cherries,
Apricots, Peaches.
And Peaches in Wisconsin. Yeah.
So we're going to have to leave it at that. But go to the Learning Store and you can get those. And Rebecca and Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been fun, Ori.
Rebecca Harbutt, Dan Marr from the UW-Madison, and thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.